Welcome to the VPR Cafe. I'm Rick Singeri. Food trends come and go. Remember blackened seafood or cooking with a wok at home? It certainly makes you wonder, what was de rigueur for New Englanders a few hundred years ago? Here to enlighten us about colonial New England cooking is Candace Page. She writes for the Savorvore section of the Burlington Free Press. Candy, great to have you back.
Good morning, Rick.
You attended a conference to learn about New England's food heritage. Tell us about that event.
Well, this was a conference held in an old 19th century hotel on a tiny rocky island off the coast of New Hampshire, Star Island. The conference was sponsored by the Portsmouth, New Hampshire Athenaeum and a group called New England Heritage. And the subject was what New Englanders ate and drank when New England was settled 300-400 years ago.
Oh, my. That sounds fascinating. Did you pick up any fun facts about what eating habits were like at the time?
This was an absolutely fascinating education on early colonial times in New England. And I think the fact that struck me most strongly was that the average calorie intake of an adult woman in colonial days was 4,000 calories. And for a man, it was 4,500 to 5,000. In these days of calorie counting, that's almost unbelievable. But also the implications that that had for the person who did the cooking. If you think about a household that had an adult man and woman and maybe a grandfather and grandmother and then three or four or five kids, the wife could be responsible for providing 32,000 calories worth of food every day.
Oh, my.
So it really gave us a window into how different life was in the late 1600s, early 1700s. A couple other fascinating things for me was I assumed in colonial times that the sweetener that cooks would have used would be maple because the trees are here. Absolutely not. The sweetener of choice was molasses. The problem was that maple is a labor-intensive crop for farmers, and it takes a lot of fuel to produce, whereas New England was the center of the molasses trade because sugarcane was grown in the Caribbean and the molasses was shipped to New England, where most of it was turned into rum. But anything that didn't become rum was used in cooking and baking.
Oh, that's interesting. What kinds of foods were people eating in New England at the time?
I should start by saying that the answer to that question depends on which era you're looking at and also what level of society you are looking at, because more affluent people ate differently than poorer people. But if we look at a family on the frontier in Vermont, say, in the 1700s, the most striking thing about the diet would be how monotonous it was. You were going to have cornmeal porridge and hard cider for breakfast, and then you were going to have cornmeal porridge and more hard cider for lunch with maybe some beans or maybe some beans cooked with salt pork, for example. And at supper time, you would have actually some more cornmeal porridge. You get the point that I'm making. There were staples that provided high numbers of calories, which of course is what you wanted. So people were eating the most valuable part of the pig you raised every year was its fat. And you would eat every bit of its fat as salt pork or as cracklings. All meat, all leaner meat was cooked with salt pork to provide those calories that people needed because of the heavy labor and the cold and so on.
This is the VPR Cafe. I'm speaking with Candace Page, who writes for the Savorvore section of the Burlington Free Press. We're discussing New England's food heritage. Candy, there were no microwaves or convection ovens back then, so how was food cooked?
In fact, there weren't any ovens. There weren't any closed stoves, or at least they didn't become common until the 1840s. So in colonial days, all the cooking was done around the hearth. You might have a bake oven set into the side of the fireplace, but women did most of their cooking either crouched on a low stool or on their knees in front of a blazing fire. And you can imagine what that must have been like in the middle of summer. One thing we learned was that you did most of your cooking not on a blaze, but on a bed of hot coals. So you would have to have the fire going for about an hour and a half before you got enough coals so that you could start cooking. Some of the cooking was done in a Dutch oven, a metal Dutch oven that would sit in the coals. You would have a lid on top and you would pile coals on top. You did your baking that way because that gave you heat all the way around. And then you would have a griddle with legs or a kettle with legs to do some cooking in the fire itself. And we also sampled something called ash cakes, which are cornmeal pancakes that you actually cook in the ashes. You wrap them in cabbage leaves and put them right in the coals. Very interesting.
Have any of the foods from the New England colonial days survived into the present?
Oh, absolutely. As you know, Rick, we have rediscovered a taste for hard cider, for example, although we don't drink it at quite the rate that they did in those days, not for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Heirloom beans. You know, there are New England varieties of beans that have seen a resurgence, including locally raised cranberry beans. Local strains of corn, both feed corn, flint corn, and eating corn. And if you think about it, the cornmeal mush that they made in colonial days, once it cooled and solidified, it would be sliced, cooked in some kind of fat. And that's polenta, basically. And rye and Injun bread, the bread made of rye flour and cornmeal, is really an early version of Boston brown bread. So, yes, some of these foods have survived, although not very many people are eating salt cod anymore.
Did you get to taste anything or prepare any foods that you really enjoyed during this conference?
Yes. That was, of course, the most fun that we had. We spent an afternoon in the kitchen making salt cod cakes. You take salt cod, which is the consistency of a brick, and it had been soaked. You soak it in water, you change the water, you soak it again, you change the water. And what you're left with, I thought, was a fairly tasteless fish. It would provide you with protein, but the flavor in the salt cod cakes came from the bacon fat that they were sauteed in and the bacon that was chopped and added to them along with cornmeal and such. We also cooked on the hearth. So we got to taste hasty pudding. We tasted these ash cakes that were wrapped in cabbage leaves and cooked in the fire. They didn't have much flavor. On the other hand, the man who was demonstrating made a gingerbread, cooked it in a Dutch oven that sat on the coals and while we watched, and it was one of the best gingerbreads I've ever tasted.
Wow.
And then, of course, every night before dinner, there was a cocktail hour at which colonial rum punch was served, and that was definitely a highlight.
Still a winner all these centuries later. Candace Page writes for the Savermore section of the Burlington Free Press. Candy, thanks for joining us again at the VPR Cafe.
Thanks for having me, Rick.